What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk for another week here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, also covering the team at The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650! 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drantzer, what's going on, man? You're out of trade deadline prison. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now you're on Thatcher Demko's groin prison.
It's Groin Watch 2024. No, man, look, I'm keeping it real, like a photo from the Royals press office, and just enjoying a nice quiet weekend until, of course, a key injury, which I know is all people will want to talk about. And yet, you know, and we'll get into it. Obviously, we're not going to not talk about it, but I do think it's worth noting, like, lots of reporting out there, all of it good and credible reporting, and yet we still don't know anything. Uh-huh. And we're not going to know anything even when the team comes out and officially tells us lower body, you know, and a timeline sometime between, you know, 2 and 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever, right? Like, it's still not going to tell us anything. This is going to be an enormously complex one to watch unfold. We can get into that.
Yeah, we know even less than we usually do when it comes to this one.
goalies are hard enough without injuries.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, we'll do our best to sift through it, all of the information out there, what it could look like going forward. But as you said, details pretty thin right now. And this one, I mean, really, until Thatcher Demko is back, it's going to be tough to say how this one plays out. But we do have literally the best person we could possibly have on to talk about this. Kevin Woodley will join us at 1 o'clock, the goalie guru. So I'm really curious to chat this one through with Woodley to see what he thinks. That's coming up at 1. But of course, let's start the show with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 11th. And we'll start with a good headline from the weekend, which is that the Canucks absolutely stomped Winnipeg. 5-0 win at Rogers Arena on Saturday night to kick off a 9-game homestand, which takes them through to the end of March. And really, a complete performance, a complete team performance. And I know after the game, Rick Tocchet had a lot of praise for a lot of different guys up and down the roster. I think he said, you know, all 21 players contributed, since even Casey DeSmith, the backup goalie, had to get in the game and pitch in with Demko for the combined shutout. So complete performance, but I did want to spotlight one player who's been in the spotlight a lot this year, because I thought Quinn Hughes was absolutely phenomenal in that game. There'd been in the stretch where the Canucks dipped a little bit,
Results-wise,
yeah. I thought there was a handful of games, maybe at most, where Quinn Hughes, his performance dipped a little bit, yeah. And I don't think it's a coincidence at all that the results dipped for the Canucks while Quinn Hughes was dipping a little bit. But last night, Saturday night.
But would you say his form dipped, or just that there were like a few more errors? You know what I mean? Like, he was still dominating. It just there was like
a little bit of sloppiness,
a little bit of like fallibility, especially on his breakout, which is usually the area of the game where he's most locked in, most dominant. But overall, like, the Hughes impact was still there. It's just that, you know, maybe not quite, maybe off by like a degree or two.
Well, that's the thing. It was not quite at the top of his game, at the peak of his powers, right? Which was extraordinarily high bar.
Even
Quinn Hughes.
That. Yeah, best defenseman on the planet. He instead looked like the best defenseman on the planet by a smaller margin.
But Saturday night, he was at the peak of his powers, I thought. Yeah. Like, I thought that was just a phenomenal game from Quinn Hughes.
Well, one game in that losing stretch in which he did look like the best player on the ice and did look like the best defenseman on the planet was the loss to the Winnipeg Jets.
Mm.
Like, in that game, you know, he was absolutely dancing in terms of his control of the game, and then he did it again. You know, like, in two games that the Jets and the Canucks have played, yes, the Jets have won one, yes, the Canucks have won one, yes, both winner won clearly, right? Like, clear victories, but one clear victory each way, and both games on Vancouver ice. But one consistent trait when the Jets and the Canucks play, there is no question who the best skater on the ice is, and that player wears number 43 for the Vancouver Canucks.
And there was a lot of talk in that in the little dip for the Canucks, which they're now officially out of, right? Having won four in a row and looked good, especially on Saturday night doing so. You know, there was a lot of talk because also this was before Elias Pettersson had signed his big extension of, hey, why isn't Pettersson dominating on a night-to-night basis like Austin Matthews, like Connor McDavid, like Nathan MacKinnon? Now, first of all, Elias Pettersson has dominated plenty of games in his NHL career and will again. I have no doubt about that. But the Canucks do have a player who can be dominant and take over the game on a night-to-night basis and who has done so, and it's Quinn Hughes. And that is really, you know, we've kind of run outside of Cale Makar, we've run out of defensemen to compare him to. And I think if you just want to talk about the overall impact, he's in that small group of players right now, the McDavids, the MacKinnons, the Matthews, in terms of the shift-to-shift, minute-to-minute impact and influence that he's having on the game. Like that, it looks different because he plays a different position and he's a different type of player. It's not the same kind of in-your-face physical dominance necessarily or athletic dominance that those guys have. But the influence and the impact is the same. Like, he is right there with that top tier of players in terms of what he's doing for the team right now.
Oh, yeah. This might be one of the most interesting Hart Trophy races we've seen in a decade. And that really hurts Quinn, you know, because I think in a normal year, he'd be in with a real chance. But this year, you've just got so many monstrous performances at the sort of top of the league standings or statistical leaderboards. You know, you've got Austin Matthews on pace for 70 goals and he's like the third favorite to win. You know, like, you've got multiple guys who could, you know, challenge realistically for 130, 140 points. You know, Nathan MacKinnon might go the whole season without failing to record a point on home ice. Like, and then you've got Connor Hellebuck, who's having one of those weird, you know, almost Dominic Hasek level seasons when you contrast the fact that his save percentage, despite what the Canucks did to him on Saturday, is like 0.20 above or 0.020 above league average, and he'll have played the third or fourth most games in the league. Right? I mean, it's like he's worth like 60 goals to the team. So you're seeing all these insane performances, and I think that's going to edge Quinn Hughes out from like serious Hart Trophy consideration, but that's the level that he's been at. In a normal year, I think his performance would warrant a Hart Trophy like finalist position, frankly. That's how good.
Yeah, and just again, there was this idea like, oh, they don't have a player who takes over games, and that's why they're struggling against these top teams. First of all, now they've beaten LA, they've beaten Winnipeg. I mean, I don't know if we still consider Vegas a top team. They beat Vegas really convincingly on the road. So they're beating top teams, and they're showing you that, yes, they do. He's not a forward, so it's not the traditional way, the traditional style of having a guy take over games, but they do have a guy who does that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's worth noting, though, right? Like the win over LA, narrowly, right? Mm-hmm. But then the convincing wins over Vegas and Winnipeg. You know, those were three teams that had kind of torched the Canucks.
Yep.
When they'd played last. So to stack those up, you know, I don't think it's silly for fans to have had some concern like, well, what will it look like against the top teams, especially given the run that this team went on where, you know, they'd faced Vegas, they'd faced LA, they'd faced Winnipeg, and every time they'd lost cleanly, like clearly, by two goals or more.
Winnipeg, but that was a close game, that loss. Yes, they ended up losing by two goals.
It was a close game.
But that to me was in a totally different category than the LA or the Vegas losses. And the Vegas loss, you're going back.
Still a multi-goal loss.
Sure.
That's a clear defeat. Like a two goals without counting empty nets.
Yeah, but it's not as if I walked away from that game thinking they were a clearly inferior team or they got roundly outplayed or anything like that even.
No, you know what I mean? I thought the Jets that first game and what was so
amazing.
Like
the Jets earned the win, don't get me wrong.
What was so amazing about the contrast between the first Jets game and the second Jets game was the Jets skated through the Canucks neutral zone structure all night long. And ultimately found ways to pass the puck into the net twice, which is why, like, I don't know. I'm not here for the equivocation. Like, it wasn't that bad. It's like they were challenging to do that the whole game, and it's like they finally made the final play twice in succession, and that was it. You know, but like there were chances to do that all night long for the Jets, and they couldn't go anywhere on Saturday. Like,
no.
Whether the Canucks had adjusted, having seen how they did it, whether the Jets were fatigued on the second leg of a back-to-back, like, those games had no stylistic relationship. The Jets' breakout was completely flummoxed. The Canucks completely dominant throughout Saturday evening's game at Rogers Arena. It was wildly impressive. And I do think it matters that the Canucks came out and kind of sunned some of the best teams in the West, especially because they hadn't done it yet.
Yeah, well, it's definitely better than not doing it, for sure.
Yeah.
Right? And as much as, yeah, I mean, I agree fundamentally that, like, I wasn't particularly concerned after that first Winnipeg game, but, I mean, I'm even less concerned now, right? Like, it's better to have this result than that previous result.
Sure.
Even if the other one wasn't particularly concerning for me. Because this was, yeah, it was a statement game, a revenge game against the Jets. So that's all the good that came out of the game on Saturday night, or some of the good, at least, anyways. Of course, the bad, as we mentioned right off the top, Thatcher Demko leaving midway through the game. Casey DeSmith comes in. Now, we heard kind of right after the game, Rick Tocchet saying, I don't think it's serious, but we'll find out more. We've heard updates from Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts. The latest that I've seen from Rick Dhaliwal saying that the team is expecting he'll miss less than a month. Those are the words from Rick Dhaliwal, our pal over at Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV. Also, Farhan Lalji reporting that apparently it's a knee injury. At least that's what he has heard for Thatcher Demko. So if you're working with less than a month, which is the timeline laid out by Rick Dhaliwal, who also says right now it sounds like he passes along that the Canucks are seeing this as a best case scenario, which I don't know if a month out would be a best case scenario. I don't know if that's how I would describe it, but less than a month.
6 weeks, Jamie. Don't be so negative.
Yeah, sure. So if he's out 4 weeks from Saturday, he'd miss 11 games and they'd have 5 games left before the playoffs. So that's if you start the clock on Saturday and he goes 4 weeks, that would be 11 games on the schedule, 5 games left before the playoffs.
So the thing is, though, is that 10-point lead atop the Pacific, mm-hmm. right? You're probably fine. And I'd add this, all season long, you know, back of the envelope thinking about this team, the two injuries that I've long thought this team couldn't, like, withstand. Now, obviously, an injury to any of your star players is going to lead, an injury to Carson Soucy or Dakota Joshua, you notice. You know what I mean? An injury mm-hmm. to a star player is going to harm your probability of winning any given game. But the two injuries that I thought this team couldn't withstand from the perspective of, like, could you limp through a month at, like, a 550 point percentage, right? Were Hughes number one, Demko number two, or two, or 2B, 1B. I think that arithmetic's kind of changed given the way that this Canucks team plays defensively, right? Not that you are still, like, comfortable going into a huge game with Casey DeSmith versus Thatcher Demko, because Thatcher Demko is such a game-breaking piece in the Canucks' favor. Even that game against Winnipeg on Saturday, there were a couple chances, not that they would have come back, but, like, where
he
could
had to
have
make
been,
some good saves.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Where it could have been, like, 2-1 or 3-1, yep. You know what I mean? And then it's like, okay, you're clawing back into it. Maybe you get a lucky break, and mm-hmm. then it's interesting late. Like, Demko's saves allowed the Canucks to extend that lead. And obviously in LA, I think he was a huge reason they won, despite the fact that it was a low event contest overall. But the way this team's defending at the moment, and this has been sustained now. I mean, what are we at? 25 plus games in which this team has played like the best defensive team in the West, like an elite, yep. elite defensive team at 5-on-5. And that always has to be distinguished because this team's still yep. a little leaky 4-on-5. So I don't know that we'd say they're like a full picture elite defensive team, but they're next to it, and they're definitely an elite defensive team at 5-on-5. I think you can probably limp through a month at 550 point percentage with Casey DeSmith.
You certainly should be able to. Now, yeah. Maybe it requires you to get on a little bit of a run on the penalty kill for the power play to, you know, which has turned a corner as of late, to keep turning a corner and keep producing. Like, you need some of those other it's gotten goals, which it didn't for a long time.
A lot of them with three skaters on the ice, though.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say it's really turned the corner 5-on-4, if that makes sense.
But you need, I think you need some of those other non-5-on-5 factors to feel really, really good about your chances with Casey DeSmith.
Sure.
But
yeah.
I agree that with the schedule, the way it sets up, and their 5-on-5 defensive strength, you shouldn't be looking at this and thinking like, oh God, the bottom is going to fall out here.
You should still be able to run out the clock on the Oilers.
Absolutely, you should be able to from this point. Now,
especially with this favorable schedule.
Competing for top spot in the West, that might be a little dicier at this point, right? I mean, we'll get into the playoff projections and Dom's model projections here in a little bit, but you know they're neck and neck with the Stars right now, so we'll see where that goes. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see who they call up from Abbotsford while Demko's on the shelf. Do they use that goalie at all? If so, how much? They don't have a back-to-back until April 2nd and 3rd. That's on the road in Vegas, on the road in Arizona, so not a lot of travel between those two games, although it is a road back-to-back. But so they've got, you know, we all know the score of the schedule here in March, right? They have 3 days off between Saturday's game and Wednesday's game, then 2 more days off, then 2 more days off after that. Like, they've got a lot of extra rest built into the schedule here. Probably don't want to play DeSmith like 10 games in a row, 11 games in a row. You're probably going to want to get somebody else in there.
They've got so much time off that you almost wonder if it's not helpful.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
When was the last time they had two days off? Not just like days off in the schedule, but no team activities.
I've never seen that in season.
Yeah.
I've never seen
outside
that
of a bye week. It's like it just doesn't happen. You get one day off, then you're back at the rink.
I think they deserve it. Like, I'm not criticizing the team for making that decision. I really have a big problem with the, like, team plays badly.
Yeah, and
clearly they're fatigued. Team PR account announces team day off, and a bunch of hardos are like yelling at it.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, guys.
My favorite is they're like, oh, they already got a day off today because they lost the game.
People are the worst. But I've never seen it. I've never seen it. And I one thing to bear in mind with the schedule is, like, you never want the extremes. You can be on the road for too long. You can be at home for too long. You can have too compressed a schedule. You can have too much time off. You know what I mean? Like, what you ideally want is, like, 3 games a week, a bunch of short 3-game road trips, and a bunch of short 4-game homestands, and just, like, a nice mix. I always wonder, you know, not just me, teams have to be thoughtful about managing various things, including we're at home for a month. That's a long time. It's hard to stay focused, especially with this much time off. So we'll see how Rick Tocchet manages it.
It's going to be interesting.
The fact that he's taken a 2-day off
right at the beginning of it, kind of. Yeah.
You know, that's like, at the end of the day, it's abnormal. And I don't think that's a bad thing. In fact, I think that's evidence of a team that's maybe thinking about it a little bit differently. And that's what you want to see as a team navigates just about any of those issues. Just really quickly on the Demko thing, we'll do a whole segment, I'm sure, on second guessing usage down the stretch and on. But it's not about when Demko returns. I don't know what the injury is. I don't know what the likely impact is going to be. I doubt that the team's going to give us good enough detail for me to cross-reference it with, like, a history
with
of
other
goalie
injuries. Yeah.
You know, like, it's going to be lower body timeline, right? That's my strong expectation. We're past the trade deadline. Things are serious now. And that's okay to some extent. But it's not about what time he misses. It's about whether or not he's 100% on return, right? We've seen it so many times in this market. Corey Schneider gets hurt on that Brandon Saad shorthanded breakaway in 2012, right? Rushes back, starts game 3 of the playoffs after the Canucks dropped 1-2 in against the San Jose Sharks and just, like, looks slow. He doesn't look like himself. Ryan Miller gets hurt in Long Island in the 2015 season. Comes back for the playoffs. They go to him in game 6 against Calgary, and he just couldn't get side to side. Like, he couldn't get post to post. Michael Ferland just eating his lunch money, and the Canucks squander a 3-0 lead early in a do or die game 6 and lose to the Calgary Flames, who were not good, right?
No.
Worst team to ever win a playoff round, frankly. No, by far. An embarrassment of a team. So, you know, it's not for me anyway. It's like, I don't know what the impact is going to be. I don't know what the timeline is going to be. I also don't really care. It's not about the time Demko misses now. It's about his preparedness, readiness, ability to perform when the stakes are high in the spring, and whether or not this injury will impact that. I don't know. No reporter knows, no analyst knows. We're just going to have to kind of watch this. But I understand why fans are, you know, into Groinwatch 2024 because it's scary. It's a scary process.
There's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
There's a lot of uncertainty. And again, we'll get more information and we'll talk to Woodley about it, but largely we won't know until we see him out there, right? Until we see him out there playing stopping pucks in an NHL game.
Honestly, we might see him and there might still be like vulnerability to an injury beneath the surface. You know what I mean? Like, we're just going to have to see how this plays out.
Okay. That was most of the whiteboard. Are we going to retire the broadsheet here or what? Unless something comes up. It's trade deadline.
I thought we were going to do all of the Groinwatch updates.
We just kind of rolled it into the headlines.
Dude, there's...
Those stuff will come up.
This is
stuff
Vancouver. Will come up. But we don't have to do every segment every day.
No,
I guess.
Exactly.
Or we could do the broadsheet and just be like, once the offseason begins,
they'll be looking for a top four defenseman.
We hear the Canucks will be prioritizing a top four defenseman.
No, look, we'll get the Filip Hronek updates. We'll get updates on the other UFAs. When's Jonathan Lekera-Mäki coming over? Look, there'll be stuff.
We'll
make it happen.
And the Lekera-Mäki one's really interesting because the team wants to bring him over, but it sounds like the player may wait. So there's actually meat
there
on
go.
That bone. I've also been asking around about Hronek stuff, and I think Sadier Shaw's reporting on this has been absolutely on point. Like,
so which is that the Canucks, I think, if that number starts with an eight, there maybe
I think there's a number at which the Canucks get really queasy, although their first priority and intention remains to lock him
and
up.
I mean, I guess it's not technically a rumor because it was from Patrick Alvin, but when he was on Canucks Central on Friday post trade deadline, he said in fact that they have made Filip Hronek an offer.
Yes,
so there is negotiations, talks happening on Filip Hronek.
If the Hronek camp's goal, though, is to maximize his income, given the unique leverage situation he's put on himself, the Canucks are going to face a really difficult decision this summer, and I don't think it's one they're going to hesitate on. You know, so it's a fascinating dynamic, and of course the fact that, you know, it sounds like there's some elbows being thrown already in negotiations. To me, very good sign.
Very interesting. So there we go. PD watch is over. Hronek
watch
is on, baby.
And groin watch.
And groin watch, of course.
Even though it's reported,
it's not a groin. Lineup notes.
Do you know the famous broadcast clip, Pat Foley and Dale Tallon?
I don't know, but I do.
There's a play in the game, and a player gets hit in the groin by a shot. Okay, and Pat Foley, who's the play by play guy, says, "Oh no, he's taken a shot directly in the knee." And then immediately they play the slow motion replay, and it's clearly puck man gets hit by puck in the groin, to which Dale Tallon, of course, Canucks special advisor, the color guy on the broadcast, goes, "I think it hit him in his wee knee." You've never heard that?
I don't think I have.
That's one of the all-time great hockey calls. You've never heard that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh, that's very good. Lineup notes, nothing really here. As mentioned, 2 days off for the Canucks. So we're all watching. Who do they call up? Will they call up a goalie today?
And do you want to do any bits on that?
Who they call up?
Yeah.
Well, we can do it later. I want to finish the whiteboard and go to break here. That's what I want to do right now.
Fair enough.
I'll save my backup goalie bits for later on in the show.
Backup goalie
for next
bits.
Segment. Playoff forecast.
Speaking of Groinwatch.
Big weekend for the Canucks. Edmonton now, they rebounded with a win on Sunday, but they lost twice in Buffalo, which was incredible. So they drop a point on the road in Buffalo. Canucks win. They're now up to a 77% chance to win the Pacific Division per Don Lucision's model versus 22 for Edmonton. If you're a math aficionado, you'll notice that adds up to 99. LA still hanging on with a 1% chance. And as mentioned, in the model's projections, the Canucks neck and neck in the Western Conference with Dallas, who I think is projected with 111 points at the end of the year. The Canucks right there. Dallas 112. The Canucks at 111. Those are the top two projected teams in the Western Conference per the model.
In terms of the gambling odds, I don't know. There's not that much. Like, the line's not open yet. But I will say there's books now that are pricing the Canucks as -1,000 to win the Pacific, essentially pricing it as if it's fully resolved. And yet the consensus number is still lagging, like -750, -550, -835. So some books aggressively calling the Pacific effectively, with the Oilers still being at about 5-1. Some books still at about 4-1 chance for the Oilers. We'll see tomorrow. Like, what I'm interested to see now is if we get official Demko news later tonight or tomorrow.
What shifts?
How does that move?
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. That's the whiteboard for today, March 11th. Look, we can talk more about what to expect from Thatcher Demko. Who might they call up? How might they handle this situation?
I would expect a full hour, like our full next hour of the show.
Yeah, we're going to do a lot of Demko. I do want to talk, you mentioned it, I do want to talk a little bit about the defense from the Canucks. There's a good question that came in the Dunbar Lumber text line as well. And look, it all goes together, right? Mm-hmm. Because part of their ability to withstand this comes down to their exceptional 5-on-5 defense right now. But we will take a break. Lots more coming up. You can text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.